Chapter 7. Joining the Dots. Police Plaza. Root pointed the finger of authority at Holly.
Congratulations, Captain. You managed to lose some LEP technology.
Holly was ready for that one. Not strictly my fault, sir. The human was mesmerized, and you ordered me not to leave the shuttle. I had no control over the situation.
10 out of 10, commented Foley. Good answer. Anyway, the safety net has a self-destruct. Like everything I send into the field.
Quiet, civilian, snapped the commander.
But there was no venom in the LEP officer's rebuke. He was relieved. They all were. The human threat had been contained, and without the loss of a single life. They were gathered in a conference room reserved for civilian committees. Generally, debriefings of this importance would be held in the operations center, but the LEP was not ready to show Artemis Fowl the nerve center of its defenses just yet. Root jabbed an intercom button on the desk.
Trouble, are you out there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now listen. I want you to stand down the alert. Send the teams into the deep tunnels, see if we can't root out a few goblin gangs. There are still plenty of loose ends. Who's organizing the Bois Kel, for one, and for what reason?
Artemis knew he shouldn't say anything. The sooner his side of the bargain was completed, the sooner he would be in the Arctic. But the entire Paris scenario seemed suspicious.
Does anyone else think it's too neat?
It's just what you wanted to happen, not to mention the fact that there could be more mesmerized humans up there. Root did not appreciate being lectured by a mud boy, especially this particular mud boy.
Look, Fowl, you've done what we asked. The Paris connection has been broken off. There won't be any more illegal shipments coming down that chute, I assure you. In fact, we have doubled security on all chutes, whether they're operational or not. The important thing is that whoever is trading with the humans hasn't told them about the people. There will, of course, be a major investigation, but that is an internal problem, so don't you worry your juvenile head about it. Concentrate on growing some bristles.
Foley interrupted before Artemis could respond.
About Russia, he said,
hurriedly placing his torso between Artemis and the commander.
I've got a lead.
You traced the email, said Artemis, his attention switching immediately to the Centaur.
Exactly, confirmed Foley,
launching into lecture mode.
But it's been spiked, untraceable.
Foley chuckled openly.
Spiked, don't make me laugh. You madmen in your communication systems. You're still using wires, for heaven's sake.
If it's been sent, I can trace it.
So, where did you trace it to?
Every computer has a signature, as individual as a fingerprint, continued Foley. Networks, too. They leave microtraces, depending on the age of the wiring. Everything is molecular. And if you pack gigabytes of data into a little cable, some of that cable is going to wear off.
Butler was growing impatient. Listen, Foley, time is of the essence. Mr. Fowl's life could hang in the balance, so get to the point before I start breaking things. The Centaur's first impulse was to laugh. Surely the human was joking. Then he remembered what Butler had done to trouble Kelp's retrieval squad and decided to proceed directly to the point.
Very well, madman. Keep your ear on.
Well, almost directly to the point.
I put the MPEG through my filters. Uranium residue points to northern Russia.
Now there's a shock.
I'm not finished, said Foley. Watch and learn.
The Centaur brought up a satellite photo of the Arctic Circle on the wall screen. With every keystroke, the highlighted area shrank. Uranium means Severomorsk, or somewhere within 50 miles. The copper wiring is from an old network, early 20th century, patched up over the years. The only match is Murmansk, as easy as joining the dots. Artemis sat forward in his chair. There are 284,000 landlines on that network. Foley had to stop for a laugh.
Landlines? Barbarians.
Butler cracked his knuckles loudly.
Ah, so, 284,000 landlines. I wrote a program to search for hits on our MPEG. Two possible matches. One, the Hall of Justice.
Not likely. The other?
The other line is registered to a Mikhail Vasikin on Lenin Prospect.
Artemis felt his stomach churn.
And what do we know about Mikhail Vasikin?
Foley wiggled his fingers like a concert pianist.
I ran a search on my own intelligence files archives. I like to keep tabs on mud people's so-called intelligence agencies.
Quite a few mentions of you, by the way, Butler.
The manservant tried to look innocent, but his facial muscles couldn't quite pull it off.
Mikhail Vasikin is ex-KGB, now working for the Mafia. The official term is Kuligani, an enforcer. Not high level, but not street trash either. Vatican's boss is a Murmanska known as Britvar. The group's main source of income is the kidnapping of European businessmen. In the past 5 years, they've abducted 6 Germans and a Swede.
How many were recovered alive?
Asked Artemis, his voice a whisper. Foley consulted his statistics. None, he said. And in 2 cases, the negotiators went missing. $8 million in lost ransom. Butler struggled from a tiny fairy chair.
Right, enough talk. I think it's time Mr. Vasikin was introduced to my friend Mr. Fist.
Melodramatic, thought Artemis, but I couldn't have put it better myself.
Yes, old friend, soon enough, but I have no wish to add you to the list of lost negotiators. These men are smart, so we must be smarter. We have advantages that none of our predecessors had. We know who the kidnapper is, we know where he lives, and most importantly, we have fairy magic.
Artemis glanced at Commander Root.
We do have fairy magic, don't we?
Yeah, this fairy at any rate, replied the commander. I won't force any of my people to go to Russia. But I could use some backup.
He glanced at Holly.
What do you think?
Of course I'm coming, said Holly. I'm the best shuttle pilot you have.
Cowboy Laboratories. There was a firing range in the Cowboy Lab's basement. Opal had it constructed to her exact specifications. It incorporated her 3D projection system, was completely soundproof, and was mounted on gyroscopes. You could drop an elephant from 20 meters in there, and no seismograph under the world would detect so much as a shudder. The purpose of the firing range was to give the Boiskel somewhere to practice with their soft-nosed lasers before the operation began in earnest. But it was Briar Cudgeon who had logged more hours on the simulators than anyone else. He seemed to spend every spare minute fighting virtual battles with his nemesis, Commander Julius Root. When Opal found him, he was pumping shells from his prized soft-nosed red boy into a 3D holoscreen running one of Root's old training films. It was pathetic, really. A fact she didn't bother mentioning. Cudgeon twisted out his earplugs.
So? Who died?
Opal handed him a video pad.
This just came in on the spy cameras. Carrere proved as inept as usual. Everyone survived, but, as you predicted, Root has called off the alert. And now the commander has agreed to personally escort the humans to northern Russia, inside the Arctic Circle.
I know where northern Russia is,
Cudgeon snapped. He paused, stroking his bubbled forehead thoughtfully for several moments. This could turn out to our advantage. Now we have the perfect opportunity to eliminate the commander. With Julius out of the way, the LEP would be like a headless stinkworm, especially with their surface communications down. Their communications are down, I take it.
Of course, replied Opal. The jammer is linked into the chute sensors. All interference with surface transmitters will be blamed on the magna flares.
Perfect, said Cudgeon, his mouth twitching in what could almost be described as glee.
I want you to disable all LEP weaponry now. No need to give Julius any advantages.
When Cowboy Laboratories had upgraded LEP weapons and transport, a tiny dot of solder had been included in each device.
The solder was actually a mercury glycerin solution that would detonate when a signal of the appropriate frequency was broadcast from the Cowboy communications dish. LEP blasters would be useless, while the Boiskel would be armed to the teeth with soft-nosed lasers.
Consider it done, said Opal. Are you certain Root won't be returning? He could upset our entire plan.
Cudgeon polished the red boy on the leg of his uniform.
Don't fret, my dear. Julius won't be coming back. Now that I know where he's going, I'll arrange for a little welcome party. I'm certain our scaly friends will be only too eager to oblige.
The funny thing was that Briar Cudgeon didn't even like goblins. In fact, he detested them. They made his skin crawl with their reptilian ways, their gas-burner breath, their lidless eyes, and their constantly darting forked tongues. But they did supply a certain something that Cudgeon needed. Dumb muscle. For centuries, the Boiskel triad had skulked around Haven's borders, vandalizing what they couldn't steal and fleecing any tourists stupid enough to stray off the beaten path. But they were never really any threat to society.
Whenever they got too cheeky, Commander Root would send a team into the tunnels to flush out the culprits. One evening, a disguised Briar Cudgeon strolled into the Second Skin, a notorious Bois Quel hangout, plonked an attaché case of gold ingots on the bar and said,
"I want to talk to the Triad."
Cudgeon was searched and blindfolded by several of the club's bouncers. When the tape came off his face, he was in a damp warehouse, walls lined with creeping moss. Three elderly goblins were seated across the table from him. He recognized them from their mugshots. Scaline, Spooter, and Phlebum, the Triad Old Guard. The gift of gold, and the promise of more, were enough to pique their curiosity. His first utterance was carefully planned.
"Ah, generals, I am honored you greet me in person."
The goblins puffed out their wrinkled old chests proudly.
"Generals?"
The rest of Cudgeon's patter was equally smooth. He could help organize the Bois Quel, streamline it, and, more importantly, arm it. Then, when the time was right, they would rise up and overthrow the council and their lackeys, the LEP. Cudgeon promised that his first act as Governor-General would be to free all the goblin prisoners in Howler's Peak. It didn't hurt that he subtly laced his speech with hints of the hypnotic mesmer. It was an offer the goblins could not refuse. Gold, weapons, freedom for their brothers, and, of course, a chance to crush the hated LEP. It never occurred to the Bois Quel that Cudgeon could betray them just as easily as he had the LEP. They were as dumb as stinkworms and twice as short-sighted. Cudgeon met with General Scaline in a secret chamber beneath the Cowboy Labs. He was in a foul mood following Luke's failure to put a scratch on any of his enemies. But there was always Plan B. The Bois Quel was always eager to kill someone. It didn't really matter who. The goblin was excited, thirsty for blood. He panted blue flames like a broken heater.
"When do we go to war, Cudgeon? Tell us when."
The elf kept his distance. He dreamed of the day when these stupid creatures would no longer be necessary.
"Soon, General Scaline. Very soon. But first I need a favor. It concerns Commander Root."
The goblin's yellow eyes narrowed.
"Root? The hated one. Can we kill him? Can we crack his skull and fry his brains?"
Cudgeon smiled magnanimously.
"Certainly, General. All of these things. Once Root is dead, the city will fall easily."
The goblin was bobbing now, jigging with excitement.
"Where is he? Where is Root?"
"I don't know," Cudgeon admitted, "but I know where he will be in 6 hours."
"Where? Tell me, elf."
Cudgeon heaved a large case onto the table. It contained 4 pairs of Cowboy double decks. Shoot 93. "Take these, send your best hit squad, and tell them to wrap up warm." Shoot E-93. Julius Root always travelled in style. In this instance, he had commandeered the Atlantean ambassador's shuttle, all leather and gold, seats softer than a gnome's behind, and drag buffers that negated all but the most serious jolts. Needless to say, the Atlantean ambassador hadn't been all that thrilled about handing over the starter chip. But it was difficult to refuse the commander when his fingers were drumming a tattoo on the tri-barreled blaster strapped to his hip. So now the humans and their 2 elfin chaperones were climbing E-93 in some considerable comfort. Artemis helped himself to a still water from the chiller cabinet. "This tastes unusual," he commented. "Not unpleasant, but different." "Clean is the word you're searching for," said Holly. "You wouldn't believe how many filters we have to put it through to purge the mud people from it."
"No bickering, Captain Short," warned Root. "We're on the same side now. I want a smooth mission. Now suit up, all of you. We won't last 5 minutes out there without protection."
Holly cracked open an overhead locker. "Fowl, front and center." Artemis complied, a bemused smile twitching at his lips. Holly pulled several cubic packages from the locker. "What are you, about a 6? Artemis shrugged. He wasn't familiar with the people's system of measurement.
"What? Artemis Fowl doesn't know? I thought you were the world's expert on the people. It was you who stole our book last year, wasn't it?"
Artemis unwrapped the package. It was a suit of some ultra-light rubber polymer. "Anti-radiation," explained Holly. "Your cells will thank me in 50 years, if you're still around." Artemis pulled a suit over his clothes.
It shrank to fit like a second skin. Clever material.
Memory latex. Molds itself to your shape within reason. One use only, unfortunately. Wear it and recycle it. Butler clinked over. He was carrying so much fairy weaponry that Foley had supplied him with a moon belt. The belt reduced the effective weight of its attachments to 1/5 of the Earth norm.
What about me?
Asked Butler, nodding at the rad suits. Holly frowned. We don't have any that big. Latex can only go so far.
Ah, forget it. I've been in Russia before. Didn't kill me.
Not yet it hasn't. Give it time.
Butler shrugged. What choice do I have?
Holly smiled, and there was a nasty twist to it. Oh, I didn't say there wasn't a choice. She reached into the locker, pulling out a large pump-and-spray can. And for some reason, that little can scared Butler more than a bunker full of missiles. Now hold still, she said, aiming a gramophone-type nozzle at the bodyguard. This may stink worse than a hermit dwarf, but at least your skin won't glow in the dark.